Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. On today's program, we're going to talk to a gentleman who's going to tell us the history of our local newspaper, the Jessamine Journal. He was the owner and editor and publisher of the journal for many years. His name is Ed Easterly. We'll talk to him about the history of the journal right after this word from our sponsor, the Farmers Bank of Jessamine County.
Beginnings are important, especially when it comes to building a future. From start to finish, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County will be with you every step of the way. Whether it's a house, a car, a college fund, or saving for retirement, it all starts here. Stop by any of our four convenient Jessamine County locations today or visit us on the web at myfarmersbank.net. Banking with friends and neighbors, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County, equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you on this Saturday morning as we continue to learn more about people, places, and things of our county. Today we're going to be talking to a fellow that I've known for quite a few years, and a lot of people around here have known for a few years, and he was instrumental in helping our community know what was going on. His name is Ed Easterly, and he was the former owner and publisher and editor and picture taker and just everything at the Jessamine Journal, which is, as far as I know, probably one of the oldest continuing businesses in our county. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Doug.
Glad to have you with me, and I appreciate you coming in. Let's talk some history about you and the Jessamine Journal. Before we start with the paper, though, I want to talk about you. Tell us a little bit about how Ed Easterly came to be, not in Jessamine County, but in the world. Where were you born? Tell us about your parents and your family.
But I was born in Muscatine, Iowa, on April 20th, 1931. My father was a newspaper man, and we were in Iowa because he had a employment with a local newspaper there. Mm-hmm. We didn't stay long. I was a native of Muscatine, Iowa, for probably no longer than 6 or 7 months, and then the family pulled up stakes and moved to the Chicago, Milwaukee area, and Dad had journalism experience in both of those areas. Dad's life ambition was to be employed by the Associated Press, which back in his days, that was the Taj Mahal of journalism, to be employed by the AP. Well, he achieved that goal 1 year later, within a period of about a year, we moved with his wife, my mother, Ethel, and Ed moved to Cincinnati. When they were employed, Dad, by the Associated Press, and he had a night job. He worked the night beat. He was located in the Cincinnati Enquirer building, is where the AP had its office, and he made friends everywhere he went, and that's no exception. As a matter of fact, his boss at the Cincinnati AP was named Ellis Ronsley, and that was my dad was so smitten by his relationship with Mr. Ronsley, being a senior to Dad and more skilled and knowledgeable in the journalism process. Dad gave that man's name, Ellis, to his second-born son.
What about that?
So that's kind of interesting, but things even get hotter and more interesting. We moved to Columbus, Ohio in about 1934, and Dad continued with the Associated Press. And, of course, I'm about, I was 1 year old when we moved to Cincinnati. We were there about 2 years, so something like 1934, I believe, we arrived in Columbus. And Dad was, his main job was covering the legislature for the state of Ohio. The state house, the state capitol, was right across the street from the Associated Press office on 3rd Street in downtown Columbus, and it wasn't very far for the reporters to go to go to the legislature meetings and everything. And Dad became acquainted and with a lot of important people by virtue of his job and the proximity to the state capitol, and things were rolling there. We lived in Columbus till 1950, at which point Dad got a was promoted by the general manager of the entire Associated Press organization in New York City. They had got a telephone call in Columbus and said, we're moving you to Louisville, Kentucky. You're going to be bureau chief for the AP at Louisville. Mm-hmm. So be ready to pack up your stuff and leave. Dad didn't know if he wanted to leave Columbus or not, but he liked the idea of having a better job and a little better pay.
Right.
We moved to Louisville.
And that's, that's how you got to Kentucky.
That's how I got to Kentucky. Okay. But I wasn't moving with Dad and Mother and my second born brother because I was off to college.
Okay.
And I went to Ohio University in the fall of 1949 after graduating from West High School. I was not a good student at any time, at any place, but I was transfixed by athletics, and that's probably short-circuited my academic achievement.
Well, let me stop you right there a minute and ask you, now, you, because I want to try to lead up to this. You were born, you said, what year? 31?
31.
Now, you had, is it just you and your brother? Were you the only two children?
Doug, or... Four brothers.
Oh, there's four. Okay. Yeah. See, I only know Tom. I knew Tom, but I knew you, but I didn't know the other two. So name your brothers. Were you the oldest?
I was the oldest. Okay. And then in 3 years and a half after I was born, Ellis was born. Mm-hmm. And then in 1940, Tom Easterly, Charles Thomas Easterly, by birth certificate, he was born. And, of course, Tom became one of the most achieving member of our family, because I don't know, Tom was small of stature, never was, I don't think, taller than about 5 foot six and a quarter or something like that, and but he had a heart that was just full of love for people and service, public service.
Yeah, because he served, didn't he serve in the I know he served in the state legislature here in Kentucky. Didn't he also serve in Florida?
He did.
So two different states. That's pretty impressive.
And further than that, we could take the whole half hour just talking about my brother, Tom. But my other brothers were distinguished, too. I had, we'll skip ahead just a minute, and we can come back to Tom. But my third-born brother, James Chapel Easterly, he got a law degree, and he attended University of Kentucky. Incidentally, backing up a little bit further again, Tom took public relations courses at UK and everything, and I think he got his degree there. But Tom transferred his credits and his interest academically to University of Tennessee in law school. Okay. Tom was elected president of his law school class at University of Tennessee. And then skipping back now to my third brother, Jim Easterly, James, he got a law degree as well, and I'm not sure what university he graduated from right now. I think I'm pretty sure he attended UK, but he served in the military, Air Force, and as a Vietnam combat veteran in aviation, and he had quite a few missions in the Vietnam War, and he got some decorations for that. He lived through it, and when he came back, he got several high appointments in the military. I think he's still living. He lives in Vienna, Virginia.
Well, I was going to ask you, the four of you, how many are still living?
Tom is the only one that's deceased.
Tom, okay.
Tom's deceased.
Okay.
He died in 2005 in an automobile accident.
You know, the one thing that I remember most about Tom, a lot of people might appreciate him more for this. Best I can remember, when he was in the Kentucky legislature, he was the one that introduced the bill that allowed us to turn right on red.
True.
True. And that was his bill, and got passed, and it saved a whole lot of people a whole lot of time, I'll tell you.
Tom was, here's an interesting aside. Tom in Vietnam was with the Green Berets, and he was assigned to the pacification unit in Vietnam. United States military wanted to achieve good relations with the villagers mm-hmm. and the people so that they could use them in the war for friendly accommodations and
right.
so forth.
Right.
And Tom educated and trained countless Vietnamese children in language, mathematics,
right.
you know, and mm-hmm. education, whereas they probably had
would
no education otherwise. Interestingly, going
yeah.
further, Tom was a college professor at University of Kentucky, branch of Elizabethtown, and he taught administrative law there and also taught languages. Tom was fluent in about four foreign languages.
Wow.
Tom was a Fulbright scholarship. In his senior year, he attended Carleton University in Minnesota, mm-hmm. is where he got his degree, I think. Tom went on, even he expanded further all the time. He was elected to the Kentucky State Senate mm-hmm. two terms. He was mm-hmm. in there for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Tom took up insurance as a sideline job. And he, to just tell you how successful he was and how hard he worked and he has his love for people, he worked for Globe Insurance Company, which I think is headquartered in Omaha, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a champion salesperson for Globe nationwide in one of those years and got a bonus from Globe of $10,000
wow.
for being the top salesman. And then when he went to Dade County, Florida, he was elected again. He married
wow.
a Spanish girl. And I think he had some insight there on how he was going to do it, because Dade County is one-third black, one-third Spanish, and one-third Caucasian, and he could really speak Spanish.
So you had these four boys that came from this union, and lawyers and legislators, but one of them decided, I guess, at some point to do what dear old dad did. And that's being the news business. That was you. Now, at what point in time in your life did you realize, this is what I want to do? I want to do what Dad did. I want to report the news. How did that get started?
That's kind of interesting. I didn't know what I wanted to do in high school, although I was sports editor for the high school annual. In my senior year, I interviewed all our coaches. And then was when I thought I wasn't any good at anything hardly, but news,
mm-hmm.
and that's the only thing I was really interested in, so I kind of decided as a senior that I might major in journalism, and that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's not forget there were two people in my family that were in journalism. My second oldest brother, Ellis Easterly, who I mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
Ellis, he was active with the colonel and everything
mm-hmm.
at University
mm-hmm.
of Kentucky, and I think his first job was at Middlesboro, and he was editor for the Middlesboro Daily News. Then he got married, then he got divorced, and then he decided he was kind of crestfallen and broken for a while, and so he got into religion, and he got his divinity degree finally at New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. So
mm-hmm.
Ellis is not only a journalist, he's also a minister.
Sure.
So he spent most of his time after being in the church for a while. I had a little church down in Pineville, Kentucky, a little Baptist church.
Mm-hmm.
He wound up at the Baltimore Sun, was an editor for the Baltimore Sun for over a decade, 10
yeah,
years,
yeah.
maybe 20. Anyway, he retired from the Baltimore Sun, and he moved with he and his wife. Couldn't have any children of his own. He adopted two. And he moved with his wife to Las Cruces, New Mexico, which, strangely enough, was the exact location where I had served in the United States military for 2 years.
What about that?
So he's 17 miles from the White Sands Proving Grounds, where mm-hmm. I served in the United States Army in 19 parts of 53 and all of the parts of 54.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Ellis, I asked him, why in the world did you move to New Mexico? And he says, well, we did a study on demographics and economics, and we found out that New Mexico was the most reasonable, inexpensive place in the United States to live.
What about that?
And he said, I didn't think my pension would cover a place like New York or California. So that's why I was there. Incidentally, while I was at White Sands, one of the loves of my life was the 1954 season. I had the pleasure of playing baseball for the White Sands Rockets,
mm-hmm.
and we had members of college players and professional players were on our team, and it's one of the joys of my life to remember all the gentlemen, fine contacts I made at White Sands playing baseball there for in the 1954 year. And I never did go overseas, so I'm thankful to God that I didn't get over into that rat race in Korea. Korean war going on there.
You made it to Louisville, and you went on to do all your college work and things like that. But how in the world did you end up in Nicholasville? That's what we want to know.
Dad,
how did you get here?
Dad was left the Associated Press. I believe it was about 1955 to accept an invitation from Governor A.B. Happy Chandler to be his press secretary.
Really?
So, yes. So Dad was the press secretary for 4 years for Governor Chandler, writing his speeches and setting up his itinerary around the United States, going to various conventions and so forth around the country. You know.
Now, when he was governor?
When Happy was governor.
That was after he was baseball commissioner, wasn't it? Wasn't he?
Afterwards.
Okay. So your dad, I mean, man, he was with the man.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a very important.
Well, it gets even more rich.
Yeah.
Doug, it gets even more rich. He did a pretty good job with Happy Chandler, I guess, because 4 years later, when Happy succeeded by Governor Burt Combs. Mm-hmm. Burt Combs asked my father to stay on and be press secretary for him for some 4 more years up through 1961. Dad was press secretary for Burt Combs. Burt Combs come out of our house, interesting aside, and he was our guest, and I got a chance to talk with Burt Combs. I also knew Happy Chandler and met him at the Jessamine County Courthouse, by the way, where I took his picture. But Burt Combs is out of our house as a guest, and Dad, of course, very loyal to his employers, wanting to make a good impression for Burt Combs. So we're out in the yard. He's got his barbecue grill going. He's got a great big steak out there that he's cooking up on the barbecue grill for Burt Combs. Burt's standing there watching. I'm watching. And Dad takes this huge steak. He's ready to put it on this grill, and he drops it in the mud.
He drops
the steak in the mud, in the dirt. Well, it was really dirt. So he picks it back up, and his face is red and everything, and Burt Combs says, "That's okay, Ed. I like my steak with a little seasoning. Put it on there and I'll eat it." So Burt Combs was very gracious.
That is funny.
Very gracious.
So he was within a period of time where, you know, our country and our state was, especially with Happy, going through some pretty tumultuous times. So he was really in the thick of things.
So on from there, I had 2 years in the military, which I described briefly.
Right.
I was also stationed at Redstone Arsenal at Huntsville, Alabama, in parts of 1953, where I went to guided missiles training school for 16 weeks. I also played on the post baseball team at Redstone Arsenal, too. Mm-hmm. And don't remember much of that there because I only had about a fraction of a season because of the school I was attending there. And then I kicked out of Redstone Arsenal over to New Mexico. But now, moving on to how I came to Nicholasville, Dad, as bureau chief for the AP for about 5 years before he got into politics, he knew the newspaper people all over the state of Kentucky.
Sure.
And all over the United States, Ohio, Tennessee, some out in California, Texas. Anyway, through some connections to my father, I found out on my own merits I wasn't going to qualify for a big daily newspaper job because I didn't have the experience, was what they wanted, and I didn't have the academic credentials either, which was what they wanted. Mm-hmm. Life is not all academics, I can tell you that right now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I got this job working for the Glasgow Daily Times. It would have been about in August of 1955, and I was sports editor and general assignment for the Glasgow Daily Times, and one of the people that I had an opportunity to visit with and to try to extract news from was the county judge of Barron County at that time, which was the future Kentucky governor, Louis B. Nunn.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, I got to know Louis B. pretty good, and he was a difficult man to reach, always very busy and so forth, and I had more successful relations with the circuit court judge. I did a feature on him, became great friends with him down there. It was a Mr. Jones and also the circuit clerk and other people in the courthouse, county court clerk,
had good relations with city council down there and everything, and five rural schools. And since I was sports editor, I got to go to all five of these rural schools, and I wrote up all these football and baseball teams at places like Austin, Tracy, and Temple Hill, and Hicesville, this little remote places in Burren County where they had six-man football, see? Mm-hmm. And also the city schools. I covered the city school football, too, and got to know the coaches real well. They got where they were really glad to see me come to these county schools because they were going to get their name and picture in the paper.
Yeah. You know?
So that went good. And there's interesting things that happened at Glasgow. I was only there 7 months. Let's go to Nicholas Vale, okay?
Okay.
But anyway, I got great memories from Glasgow, and that was my the thing I remember about Glasgow that's locally interesting is 2 years after I came here from Glasgow, some of the people that I met wound up in Nicholas Vale, and one of them was Sammy Sears, who worked at the school board office back around I'll say maybe 1958, something like that. Mm-hmm. And he was a head football coach at the Glasgow High School when I was there. So here I am, 2 years after I'm coming, immatriculating to Nicholasville, the head football coach from Glasgow's coming into Nicholasville to get a job and brings his wife with him, you know.
Yeah.
So he works here at our school board. And, oh, that's not enough. It don't end there. Holy smokes. The former Alexander girl, whose father was sheriff in Barron County, is the lady that married Bobby Day Wilson when they went to college, at Transylvania?
Yeah.
Anna.
Yeah,
Anna. And Anna became a teacher in the Jessamine County Public School
sure
system.
Did.
And she was just a little girl in Glasgow High School when I was there. So she comes to Nicholasville, and she's here. And then here comes Pat Nielsen, her sister.
Her sister.
And she comes in here, and she's on the school board. And then all of a sudden, this colored coach from Rosenwald Dunbar down in Glasgow, he comes up here in Nicholasville, too. Do you remember his name, that colored coach?
Leonard Cavell?
Leonard Cavell.
Really?
Yeah, he left Rosenwald Dunbar, yeah. I guess, at Glasgow, and he comes
come
up.
Here.
He's a coach here, and then they kick him out from when we integrate the schools. He becomes a coach here at Jessamine County High School.
And he was involved with the junior high, and yeah.
So there's four people. Well, I thought that would be interesting to Jessamine County people, so I'll throw that in there.
Yeah, and that is. Did you start here just as a reporter?
That's a long story, but it's very interesting. The history of the Jessamine Journal is at stake here. The Jessamine Journal was founded in 1873. Mm-hmm. Jessamine Journal is the second oldest business in continuous operation in Nicholasville. That it succeeded and preceded only by First National Bank and Trust Company, founded in 1871, mm-hmm. which now is Central Bank.
Right, right.
So that takes care of the history of the Jessamine Journal. However, another important point of history for local people to assimilate that they may not know is the Jessamine Journal had the distinction an honor of having one of its publishers be the president of the Kentucky Press Association.
Really?
And that was in 1901. Harry McCarty was elected president of the KPA. Mm-hmm. And I think that's quite an honor for Nicholasville.
Oh, yeah, sure.
At any rate, the Jessamine Journal endured many a hardship and many a year of difficulty, and I don't know if they ever rose very much above break-even point. Mm-hmm. Economically, I was born into competition in Nicholasville. I started with the Newsweek in April 1, 1956. It competed directly against Mr. Delmar Adams and the Jessamine Journal. And Mr. Adams had been here since 1940,
okay.
And his business was deteriorating rapidly. And at the time that I was competing against him, we were really fighting dog and cat, you know, to get the news locally and compete against one another and things like that.
Was his a weekly also?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the journal was weekly. Was the one you were with weekly?
I was the Jessamine News Week was a weekly, and I bought the paper from John Sutterfield. My dad and I bought the newspaper. Bear in mind, I don't have any money at this time.
Yeah.
I'm just coming in here out of the Army and from Glasgow, and I'm 25 years old after my first 3 weeks at the Jessamine News Week. I turned 25.
Yeah.
See, so I'm young. As a matter of fact, I'm the same age right now as Tasha Baker is, that just came in as an editor for the Jessamine Journal.
Is that right?
So she's 25. I met with her just a couple weeks ago.
I hope you told her that, and that surely brought her some confidence.
It should.
Yeah, she's a nice lady.
She is, she's indeed, nice and lady. We had a nice meeting, and we're going to meet again sometime.
Well, how long, then, were you in Jessamine County in the paper business?
34 years.
34.
April 1, 1956 to April 1, 1990, when I told. Now, there's a little bit more on the organization. I don't know if we're going to run out of time or not, but
go ahead.
The Jessamine Journal was at its wit's end after competing with me for about 8 months, 9 months, something like that. And in December of 1956, the journal fell mightily. They were bankrupt. Mr. Adams could not borrow any money. Mm-hmm. His credit was no good. He had exhausted his acceptance here at places, printing houses in Lexington. The Louisville paper companies would not ship him and manufacture him because he was in arrears on his payments and so forth. And his machinery and his equipment and his shop was run down and obsolete and battered and didn't do a good job because it wasn't running effectively, mm-hmm. and some of it wasn't running at all, which might lead to this joke that Mr. Enos Swain, that was publisher of the Danville Advocate Messenger, told me years later about in 1966, subject of Delmar Adams come up, and Mr. Swain, Mr. Adams is dead, his wife Nellie is dead. Dead. His mother is dead, that lived on West Maple Street. So I asked him, I said, Delmar had to come down here a lot of times, Mr. Swain, to get spacing material printed by, manufactured by you, so he could take it back to Nicholasville to get out his Hoftite forms and all that. And I know that. And Mr. Swain said, I'll tell you a good story about Mr. Adams. I come here, and he come down here to see me, and in the early 1950s, and I just casually asked Delmar. His paper usually always came out on Thursday morning, and he was in here to see me on a Tuesday, and I says, well, Delmar, Mr. Swain says he asked Mr. Adams, well, Delmar, how's the Jessamine Journal going? How's your paper going this week? And Delmar says, oh, hell. He says, I'm still getting out last week's paper. I thought that was pretty cute because I sympathize with Mr. Adams on that, because there were a few times in my paper, during my tenure at the Jessamine Journal, my paper was late, too. It's not easy to get it out on time. And when you have financial problems and your equipment's not working good, you know.
It's even trouble. But thinking about you and remembering what I remember about the journal, you know, you were doing this. I'm talking about when I was young and I can remember. You were doing this basically. You had Ray Brock taking pictures for you out there and getting some information. Carrie Jane Foster worked with you a long time in the shop, and really that was it, wasn't it? Wasn't it just kind of you three or four?
Oh, in the first year, Doug, that's interesting. I mean, let me backtrack just a little bit again. The sale of the Jessamine Journal was consummated in December of 1956.
Okay, that's to you.
My father helping me negotiate, because he had some financial security. My dad was never a rich man, but he was backing me up, and he was the impetus. When he first asked me if I wanted to come down here and run a Kentucky newspaper, I said, no, Dad, I better not. I said, I'm happy down here at Glasgow. I says, I'm making friends down here, and I enjoy my work. And he said, why not branch out? He said, you've got opportunity. And he said, do it. I'm for you.
Yeah.
And I said, well, Dad, I said, I don't want you to have to risk your financial future and maybe mortgage a house or something like that for this fling here at the Nicholasville newspaper prospect. I said, just let it go. Dad said, well, I think you can do it. And he convinced me, you know, you so that's why up. I'm here. Yeah. Anyway, the paper, the Jessamine Journal, under Mr. Delmar Adams, after he had worked here for some, 1940 mm-hmm. to 1956, mm-hmm. 16 years, was sold at master commissioner sale at the courthouse door right across the street yeah. by Harvey Parton.
What about
was
that?
A master commissioner sale that yes. sold it. And nobody else was even there to bid against my father and me. Just nobody you. Even wanted it. And the Jessamine Journal was non-functioning. The press wouldn't work. The rotors were beaten up. The linotype wasn't running. We had a Mergenthaler Model 14 linotype. It was the heart and the soul of our typesetting mm-hmm. Organ for our paper. Wouldn't work. I had to hire a guy from Georgetown, Kentucky, named Charlie Grody. That was one of John Sutterfield's papers, mm-hmm. by the way, the guy that sold mm-hmm. the paper to me. He come down here, and we closed the journal down, I think, the last week of December and the first week of January so that we could work totally on refurbishing a shop, getting in some new equipment. And So Charlie Grody got that thing fixed up, cost me $1,000, and I had to take all kinds of additional purchases from Star Parts at South Hackensack, New Jersey, and at Mergenthaler Linotype Company at Brooklyn, New York. Mm-hmm. But we got these parts that Charlie Grody wanted to fix this linotype up, and we got that Model 14 running.
Got it done. That's amazing. And from out of that became...
Now, we printed Doug, two newspapers then.
Yeah.
I didn't get... When we didn't merge until September of 1957. We put out two newspapers, one on Thursday and one on Friday. Put the Journal out on Thursday and the Newsweek on Friday when we resumed publication after the repairs in the third week of January 1957.
So you were pretty much doing all of this by yourself at that point.
My dad had a job. He couldn't be down here doing it. He was advising me and counseling me a little bit, I was doing the work.
You were going out getting the news. You were taking the pictures. You were setting the type. I guess you were selling the advertising, too. Man alive.
You
kind of was a one-man show there for a while.
I certainly was. And to elaborate on what you just said, Doug, my secretary that first year with a Newsweek before I went mm-hmm. with a journal mm-hmm. was Lyda B. Smith. Lyda B. Smith was Carrie Jane's aunt.
And she wrote for a long time. Didn't she write like a social column for a long time? Yeah.
And we finally honored Lyda B. Smith at Rose Terrace Nursing Home in 1988 or 89, just before the paper mm-hmm. was sold. We went mm-hmm. up there, and I had a cake baked for her, and I let my wife, Helen Grow Miles Easterly. Mm-hmm. She presented mm-hmm. the cake to Lyda B., and I had a plaque printed mm-hmm. to commemorate her service, and I made a presentation of that to her. And we had Linda Wiley, one of my chief advertising layout and design people, was there at my invitation to be subject to it, plus Earl Clark, my top shop operator.
Yes.
Earl Clark was there. And, of course, along with my wife and me, we made a nice homecoming away from home for Lyda B. at Rose Terrace Nursing
Home. That's amazing.
Celebrating her. And I think she lived pretty close to 100 years old. I think she died in about 1998. I think she was born about 1900. And do the arithmetic.
Yeah.
Anyway, she is.
Well, you mentioned her, and you mentioned Earl, who I'd completely forgot about. Earl's a nice guy.
I don't want to forget Elwood Aldrich.
Well, I want you to mention him, and I want you to talk about Carrie Jane, too.
Okay, and Carrie Jane Foster.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Carrie was there, too, to commemorate that. Now, Lyda B. worked for me just for about 7 years, from about 1956 to about 1963. Then Carrie Jane, I heard her from Nicholas Hill Drugstore, and she's working from Jack Ragland at the time at Nicholas Hill Drugstore. And I don't believe Jack wanted to lose her because she was the top drawer worker at Nicholas Hill Drug. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she come with me because I guess she wanted to have a little bit more excitement than what the drugstore gave. Carrie Jane was very accomplished, knew all the people in Nicholas Hill and Jessamine County, a great typist. I guess she could probably 120 words a minute or something like that on a keyboard. A bright lady, And she also was my chief receptionist and also my bookkeeper. Sent out all to process all my bills for me when we sent out monthly bills and everything. Don't want to forget Carrie Jane. She's very important to the business.
Right.
I couldn't even have been we couldn't have made it over the hump and been successful financially without Carrie Jane and Earl Clark and Linda Wiley and Elwood Aldridge was a I took him out of high school. I think he dropped out of high school in 1957 and come in looking for a job. And I taught him the job because I had to learn rapidly on a job. And I picked it up pretty quick on the shop operations,
well,
you know,
sure. Yeah,
picking
you
a California
to.
Job case, you know. And
yeah.
Then when we went into the back shop and went into photo offset newspaper, we had a Kenro vertical camera back there, and we were working on all these different trays with the hypo and fixer and developer and water, you know, to process these whole pages of newspapers,
because
we're converting to offset. And I taught Elwood that, and also taught him the hot type process before that, so that he never did run. He could run the hand fed good job presses, but he never did. And he helped feed the old flatbed newspaper press, too, the old Whitlock press.
Well,
big story, too, when we got kind of a humorous story, when we were up at 305 and a half North Main Street,
yeah,
right across the street from Keller Motor Company.
Right.
I got a letter from my owner of the building, S.J. Eerie Sr.
Owned a lumber yard.
And my business was located in his old lumber yard building right on Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
And after operating there for about 4 years, I got this letter in a mail from Mr. Eerie sometime in the summer of 1960. Mr. Easterly, pay me, please, your $50 rent for the building, and be advised you're going to have to vacate the premises in 8 weeks because I've sold the business and the land to First National Bank and Trust Company.
Wow. So what about that?
I had a...
Is that when you went down on
East Brown,
yeah.
Wilmore Crutcher, bless his soul, he saved my life. Wilmore Crutcher and his beautiful wife.
Lived down there, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Lived through two doors up.
Yeah, they did.
And they owned the old
the building.
Building there.
Which still stands, by the way, folks, if you're ever down that way, you want to see it. Real quick, because our time is closing, I want to ask you two questions. First off, why did you decide in 1990 it was time to get out?
I decided to get out because my newspaper was on top, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
We had climbed the mountain. I paid off my father from all his loans. I bought up the stock of my brothers that were part of the corporation, the Jessamine Publishing Company, and became sole owner in 1976 of the Jessamine Journal. Was no longer under the shadow of my father and my mother. She held quite a bit of the stock, too, although I was always 51% controlling stockholder, courtesy of my father on the setup from the Secretary of State at Frankfurt, where you get incorporated. But at any rate, I sold it because I recognized that I was so blessed by the Lord, my king and my father and the Lord, to have good health all these years. I don't think I ever missed a day in 34 years during the working week. I was sick on the weekends.
Right.
It's the only time I got sick and couldn't report for work. So I decided I'd better quit rolling the dice and sell the business while the market value was high. And I had three different people want to buy it. I even had R.J. Corman put in an overture on it. And you know what? Why R.J. Corman ever made a bid?
No idea.
I talked with him out at his place for a little while, and I opened the books for him a little bit. And I told him that he could pay for his investment at the Jessamine Journal if he wanted to pay $1 million that he could pay for his investment in the Jessamine Journal in 10 years. He said, well, Ed, he said, thanks a lot for coming down here. He said, I'll decline to buy your business or make a bid, either one. He said, I've got seven corporations, and all of them are making more money than you are.
that's true. Well, that's the first
question. I bought the business from Republic Newspapers Incorporated at Farragut, Tennessee, from Douglas A. Horn in April 1, 1990. And then I retired, because the reasons I explained to you.
Right.
Plus, I was getting a chance to finally be with my wife, Helen, and my two children, Eddie and Kimberly, and my beautiful, wonderful stepdaughter, Jane Miles Teeter.
Sure.
And so.
Right. Well, yeah, you get to the point. You need to enjoy because people, you know, when you are a publisher, editor, or doing all this stuff for a local paper, you're not on a clock. You're not on a Monday 8 to 5. because you news doesn't just happen Monday 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. News happens at Saturday night at midnight and all hours of the day and night. So you're kind of on call for our community because there's so many things happening and that need to be reported. And so, yeah, you were all over the place. Final question for you. If you have, and you do right now have the opportunity to, how do you want people of Jessamine County to remember Ed Easterly?
Well, I'm a newspaper man. I don't like the journalism, the way it's presented now by the daily newspapers and some of the television media, and it was getting kind of bad decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a tremendous amount of change in newspaper policy on the editorial deportment,
mm-hmm.
the way that they conduct themselves with bylines and the way they integrate opinion into their news stories. Now, that was not existent
yeah.
in my old journalism school at Ohio University yeah. in Athens, Ohio. They did not countenance that. You were supposed mm-hmm. to be objective. You're supposed to give each side a voice in a news story you wrote and not to take sides or get opinion. Nowadays, right. they're lacing the stories with all kinds of opinion.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like that. Of course, now I want to acknowledge that it's a privilege in the authority of every newspaper for its editorial policy to be whatever it wants, what the owner wants it to be, because he's mm-hmm. got the money, mm-hmm. he owns the business, and it's his mm-hmm. prerogative, mm-hmm. historically, going back to days of the penny press,
mm-hmm.
It's historically the 1700s, 1600s, it's appropriate for the publisher
right.
to have his own editorial
right.
policy, and that means he gives his opinion, and I saw where the Lexington Herald endorsed every Democratic candidate that ran and no Republicans mm-hmm. in this last election.
Mm-hmm.
Let me interject, Doug, one
yeah.
thing while we got time, because this is important to Jessamine County people.
Sure.
Before Mr. Adams took over the business, this is local news, before Mr. Adams took over the business, my predecessor in 1940, the Jessamine Journal was bought and was in having financial difficulty,
mm-hmm.
and it was saved by three thoughtful Jessamine County luminaries, I'll say. Great people.
Mm-hmm.
It was this story was told to me by Bob Fain,
mm-hmm.
a great
yeah.
writer for the Lexington Herald
yes.
Leader. Bob Fain told me that the owners of the Jessamine Journal in 1939 and just before Mr. Adams acquired it
mm-hmm.
was Larkin Fain,
mm-hmm.
Robert H. Hunter, runner Hunter Hardware,
mm-hmm.
and I guess the grandfather of Hunter Doherty, our circuit court judge now, and also from Congressman John C. Watts.
What about
those
that?
Those three people owned the Jessamine Journal in 1940.
Interesting. Well, I want to say on behalf of Jessamine County, we appreciate your contribution to our community and for all those years giving us the news and letting us know what's going on. And things have changed as you've seen over the years. Things changed while you were there. And it's changed even more. But that hometown paper was a very important part of our community and getting it where it is today. And we just appreciate the work that you did, Ed, all of those years.
Can I say one thing to
sure.
conclude my interview? I would be remiss, Doug, if I did not thank my advertisers. I would
yep.
not be here.
That's right.
And I not only thank my advertisers for their financial support, I want to thank them for being personal friends of mine, people that
right.
I would yet today
right.
do something for, do a favor for, or help them in any way.
Right.
And that includes, may I be specific a
sure.
little bit, particularly the real estate industry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll call off a few names
mm-hmm.
because they were heavy supporters of me.
Mm-hmm.
Harlan H. Veal Sr. and
mm-hmm.
his son, Press Veal.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Collins.
Mm-hmm.
Kenneth Watts. Ellen Pinkston.
Bobby Day Wilson.
Bobby Day Wilson,
yeah,
absolutely.
You mentioned him
a big
ago.
Advertiser
mm-hmm.
of mine. And Jackie Dale Bruner and
yes.
his father, Armster Bruner.
Yes.
And then, of course, Ralph Watts that run Hunter's S&T
mm-hmm.
was a tremendously supportive
mm-hmm.
person of
mm-hmm.
mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Ralph Watts. I'm sorry he's gone.
Yeah.
But he helped me a lot. And I helped him sell a lot of goods and merchandise,
sure you
too.
Did.
But at any rate, I can tell you a lot more, Doug. Maybe another time.
Well, thank you, Ed, for coming. Appreciate you. Enjoy your continued retirement, and we appreciate you being part of our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
My thanks to Ed Easterly for coming in. Give us a little bit of history about himself and our local paper, the Jessamine Journal. Well, we enjoyed being with you here on this Saturday morning for all things Jessamine. We'll do it again next Saturday as well, 11 o'clock. And I hope you'll tune me into my regular show. I'm here every weekday morning, 6 to 8 a.m. on Jess FM 105.9.
In 1934, a brand new house cost about $6,000. The cost of a gallon of gas was 10 cents. And in 1934, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County opened their doors at 200 North Main Street in Nicholasville. And they've been there ever since. The times may have changed, but Farmers Bank is still here. Still proud to be the only locally owned and locally operated bank in Jessamine County. Banking with friends and neighbors. Farmers Bank, equal housing lender, member FDIC.